Welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. Thank you for spending some time with us this afternoon. Very big ruling from the Supreme Court coming out this morning that Trump has immunity for those official acts that are taken during presidency. That, of course, applies to anybody who is the president of the United States. This on top of quite a wild ride at the end of the week last week, Thursday night being that debate. Whew! A lot of fallout since then. We've watched as people on the left and the right have tried to appropriately place their politically advantageous spin on it. It's how the game is played. Our job is to listen to what people are saying and just determine on our own if we actually agree with it. One of the things that was said at the debate had to do with the economy. Let's listen into President Trump.
We have the greatest economy in the history of our country. We have never done so well. Everybody was amazed by it. Other countries were copying us. We got hit with COVID. And when we did, we spent the money necessary so we wouldn't end up in a Great Depression, the likes of which we had in 1929. By the time we finished, so we did a great job. We got a lot of credit for the economy, a lot of credit for the military and no wars and so many other things. Everything was rocking good.
Well, if you heard anybody on the left try to react, you know, setting aside Joe Biden's performance, they said all Donald Trump did was lie. And, you know, when it comes to the economy, I know what my personal experience was like under Joe Biden comparatively to Donald Trump, and that is a clear choice for me. Let's talk to somebody who's behind that. Steve Moore joins us once again, a distinguished fellow in economics at the Heritage Foundation and a Trump economic advisor. Steve, welcome back to the show. Good to have you back. Steve, are you there? Can you hear me okay? All right, I'm going to put him on hold here. Let's see if we can get Steve back engaged in the line there. The CNN lie list that I think a lot of people have been really resourcing, going back to the lies, has to do with Trump tax cuts, suggesting that the Trump tax cuts were better for the economy than what Joe Biden is doing. Joe Biden always says that all Donald Trump wants to do is ensure that the wealthy don't have to pay their fair share. Joe Biden's economic policy, I guess he's going to fix it. It's always interesting to me when an incumbent says, you got to vote for me so I can take back America or whatever. It's like, shouldn't you be enjoying your success right now? Let's get to Steve Moore here. Thanks, Steve, for being with us. I'm very excited to hear what you think about the debate last week and how Donald Trump did.
Hi, Annie. Good to be with you. It was a catastrophe for Joe Biden. I can't tell you what's going to happen in November, but I can tell you with almost full assurance that Joe Biden will not be president this time next year. So the question then is, what will the Democrats do?
Yeah.
You know, will they replace him? I've been saying for a year, I think I've said it on your show, that I don't see how the Democrats could run Biden again. I wish the Republicans had never had that debate, because now the Democrats may be able to hit the reset button. But I thought Trump was very good. I thought he was well behaved. I thought he made some really strong points, and it's about the economy, and Biden has ruined our economy, as everyone knows. Massive deficits, massive inflation, a border out of control. And by the way, I thought it was strange that Biden didn't even have any response to this stuff. You know, Trump would say, you lost control of the border. You have massive inflation. You've run up our debt. Incomes are falling. And I thought he would be better prepared with some answers, but he had no answers.
Yeah. Yeah. I said this on my show multiple times, but I don't think the Democrats wanted him to be the nominee. And I thought that it was a little bit of a sabotage to let him go out.
I think it was a setup. I think Republicans were dumb to, they should have waited till after the convention to have this debate, but we'll see how this all unfolds. They may try to go with Gavin Newsom. He's the governor of California, but my gosh, I mean, then the campaign is just, you want America to look like California because California is a disaster. They may go with Kamala. And, Kamala is very unpopular for a lot of reasons. She was in control of the border. She didn't do too good a job of that. But even Kamala would be an improvement over Biden, because at least she can get out intelligible sentences. But look, Trump is on a roll right now. He's been fantastic. I was there with him when he gave his remarks at the Business Roundtable meeting with all the 75 CEOs. He was, on top of his game. The CEOs, many of whom, back in 2016, almost all of them endorsed Hillary, but they seem to very much favor Trump, because Trump is pro-business, pro-jobs, pro-America.
You know, I think about You know, is it Trump, Biden? Is it Trump, somebody else? Is Donald Trump going to be in jail? Are we going to get a sentencing here in 10 days?
Not after the decision that came out by the court, which gives him immunity for a lot of these supposed crimes, and they're not even going to be able to prosecute him until after the election now. So I don't think that's going to be a big issue going forward. And, you know, I thought it was such a low blow when Biden called him a convicted criminal, a felon. Yeah. I mean, here's Biden, who has done so many illegal things, and Biden's not the one with the conviction. It's Trump. But having been around Trump a good deal for the last few weeks, it's clear to me that he's ready to go.
Mm. Well, you know, I think to myself, it really doesn't matter who the opponent is on the other side, especially when it comes to the economy. Wouldn't you say that Donald Trump's economic plan in the first term speaks for itself, and there's some pretty quick remedies that could be put into play to give the economy back to the American people in a second term?
I sure would, and I'd say that, you know, I'm writing a book right now called Trumponomics 2.0 about all. I got to run in a minute because I got to jump on Fox, but sure. I'll tell you this, that if you just put his agenda versus his record against Biden's, it's not even a contest.
Yeah. Yeah.
It really isn't.
They understand. Americans understand that, and it's pretty clear. We'll let you go. We'll see you on Fox. We appreciate you being with us today.
All right. Thanks, Annie. Have a great week.
You as well.
And happy 4th of July.
Yes. Happy Independence Day to you as well. Steve Moore, Distinguished Fellow in Economics at the Heritage Foundation, a Trump economic advisor as well. There are several guests that we have on this show that we are always kind of dancing in between their big Fox hits. And so we appreciate when they still are willing to work us in because it's a busy schedule that they keep. And Steve Moore, he always makes time for you. He values being able to come talk to you through this mechanism here. So we're grateful for it. I'm trying to think of anything, Brad, last week at that debate. Like, what was the point that Joe Biden drove home that would make a voter who was listening, a taxpayer listening, go, I'm going to vote for him?
There was nothing in the debate. Really, I think that his goal for the debate, I think Joe Biden showed up to that debate and his plan was, I'm going to make Trump angry and seem irrational and unhinged. And he couldn't do it. And when he couldn't do it, he didn't have any substance to go along with it. Because you can't really, if you're Joe Biden, you can't go, hey, Bidenomics, look at the economy. It's doing great.
He did try to throw statistics out there. And he flubbed every single one of them.
Yeah. I mean, and like, if you're, I'm going to use the term gaslight because that's essentially what he's doing by trying to say, hey, I know that you can't afford to make ends meet, but the economy's better than ever. And that's just your perception of it. That's gaslighting. He's lying about the economy. But if you're going to try to gaslight the American people, you are going to need to deliver statistics that make your point, and you're going to need to be able to do that coherently. And he was nowhere near any of that. And so he just sounded lost the whole time.
What do you make of the people going, saying repeatedly that all Donald Trump did was lie? I've listened to the whole debate twice. The first time I was at the debate watch party and had a lot going on and was able to listen and participate in everything. But I went and watched the replay that night because I'm a nerd. And I was more impressed with Donald Trump's patience the second time around.
Mm-hmm.
And the points that he made, I appreciated on many, many cases, like the abortion one. That's one that they said that that's one of the lies that are cited by Donald Trump. They said that Donald Trump lied that the Democrats want to make abortion legal after birth. What Donald Trump said in the debate was that the left, which you can source directly to two places off the top of my head, in Virginia, with Governor Northam, who was asked in a radio show of all places. So what happens if there's an abortion and this phrase just makes me vomit in my mouth, but the abortion isn't successful? Well, what happens if an abortion isn't successful? Well, then the baby is born alive. Yeah. Then the baby is outside of the womb and alive, because a successful abortion means dead baby. That's just the scientific matters, terms of the matter. So Northam was asked about whether or like what should happen in that situation. This is a known quantity that you can listen to Northam's own words and understand that his response was that they would make the fetus that is now outside of the womb. It's a baby. It's a baby inside of the womb and outside of the womb. But let's just say fetus for the sake of this conversation. That they could make the fetus comfortable while they had a discussion between the mother and the doctor, which also offended me because, like, what if the father was there to support the mother in that instance and they both decided that they wanted to, you know, go through with this process, but the baby isn't successfully aborted. They said they'd make the fetus comfortable while the mother and the doctor decided what to do next. How many options do you have? What are the choices? And then you go over to California where they wrote a law that was talking about, I think it was talking about the fourth trimester or something like that. But the wording on the law and the legislation was so vague. It left open this possibility that if there were a botched abortion and the baby was born alive, that you could, you know, take care of things. And then they rewrote some of that legislation so that it wouldn't be as openly permitted the way the original legislation was written. So to suggest, I mean, there's more substance and fact behind the allegation that, yeah, the left dabbles in killing babies outside of the womb. Mm-hmm. They certainly factually do. Now, when Trump says something like that, and he says it in a way that is summarizing what the left is capable of doing, he is taking the most extreme version of the pro-abortion Democrat Party and making that the point to say, this is what's in play with these extremists, which is the whole point he made and is the right point. The left, they are the extremists when it comes to the abortion issue. Nobody's talking today about the fact that if you're somebody who is a single issue voter on abortion, that Donald Trump's answer actually did not satisfy a lot of those people who want to look at Donald Trump as, you know, if you're a Republican, then you should be against anything ever that has anything to do with abortion. And he made his whole first part of his statement essentially surrounding the instances where abortion is okay and understanding and really like doing the Pontius Pilate thing, which is the Federalist thing to do, to say it's a state issue. He didn't say I'm okay with abortion. He didn't say I'm not okay with abortion. He said it's a state's rights issue. And you can look around the country and see that people are coming together on this issue because more people are allowing more abortions than prior. He said he was, and then he personalized it instead of talking like as the executive person who would be in the presidency. He said, essentially, listen, I believe that in situations like rape, incest, and the life of the mother, that those are exceptions that should be made. But he was, you know, highlighting them as exceptions. And then he properly assesses the left's position, the extremist portion of the left on abortion, doesn't know what to do with a baby that is born alive in an abortion. That's not a completely understood thing. And while we have laws that say that you can abort a baby that is 40 weeks in gestation, as long as it's inside, as long as it's on the other side of the woman's skin in her belly, that is an abortable baby. Oh, that nobody ever does that. But then why are we legislating it so that it can? If nobody ever does it, then why is it something that is so important to include in the legislation that is being put out there? It's because the left are the extremists on the issue and they want absolutely no parameters around that issue because any parameter is too many parameters and they need the holy grail of abortion, the thing that they worship at in big government. The sacrament of abortion for the left, they need you to stay so far away from that you can't touch it because it's a way that they get to appropriate 50% of the people, women. They assume when it comes to this issue that women, it's not, they don't sell it to you like women should have the right to kill the baby if they don't want to raise the baby. That's not how they sell it to you. They sell that women should have the right to control what happens to their body. Well, excuse me, but in the instances not included in what Donald Trump's position is with rape and incest and life of the mother. As long as there is not forced sex on a woman who then becomes pregnant, did she not have a choice about where her body was doing what her body was doing before it became pregnant? I believe she did. If the woman's choice is taken away and the consequence of a removed choice results in a pregnancy, we have a very important discussion to have. But in those instances where choice was engaged in and the consequence is a child, does that individualized DNA that is growing inside of that woman's body that has a heartbeat at 6 weeks, that is fingers and toes at 11 weeks that you can count on a screen through an ultrasound that peers through the skin of a woman's belly, does that child just simply not matter because she was up for the one night that consequently ended up in a child growing inside of her belly? That child doesn't matter? Well, when does it matter? Does it matter when you can see the movements, when the baby will react to you poking at it? Does it matter when a guy like Ben Carson goes in and does what, open heart surgery on in utero babies? Did you know that when they go into the woman's belly to do heart surgery on a fetus, do you know that they give them pain medication? Do you understand that there's anesthesia that is applied to these in utero fetus so that they don't feel pain during a life-saving heart surgery? I mean, folks, come on. Even if you're pro-choice, even if you're pro-abortion, you understand the conflict there. You get it. So the only question that matters is, when does the life matter? And if somebody's individual value as a distinct, unique, human, God-made person only matters when the mom says, okay, now you matter. Talk about the privilege of being able to live, because that's all the left speaks about, is privilege. Talk about being so privileged that your mother decided you got to be born. That's the extreme position of the left. They are the extremists on this issue. We can have all of these intellectual conversations about policy and legislation and, you know, trying to figure out what kind of money we should give women who do find themselves in a precarious situation where they may not be able to provide the life for that child that they would want that child to have. Is the alternative death? Is that the policy of the United States of America? I mean, yes, actually, in fact, right now it is. And it's never going to be fixed by sending men and women into a chamber where they argue and discuss this so that the next election that comes around, they can unchange it. You have to actually talk to people on a human to human level and say, let's talk about what this really is and what is the actual need here. Maybe culturally, we need to understand more the consequence of having sex. It's not a consequence free endeavor. You can make babies that way in most cases. And if you're going to engage in that, you understand what the consequences are. Just like if you're going to go to the casino and play the slots or play blackjack, there is a consequence there. Good consequences and bad consequences. But when you play, you know that you're gambling. You know there are risks. You don't just make it so that you go to the casino and nobody ever loses. That's not right. That's not the way it works. It actually can't function if you make it so that that's the way it works. Every decision that we make in life has consequences. But this one, we're willing to kill over making sure that women fear losing control of their own bodies and men are too scared to stand up to say anything about it. That's why it's the sacrament. Because they can control you. They can control what you say, not what you think, because you still feel it in your head and in your heart and in your gut. You still know. But if they can keep you quiet about it or angry and loud about it, they win. Let's take a quick break. Let's get the results, or not the results. Let's get some thoughts on today's YouTube live chat poll. Grade the last week in politics. Do you give them an A? Was it an A week? Or a B/C. So it's basically just saying, yeah, it's a passing grade. Or a D or an F if you go to the Annie Fry YouTube live broadcast. You go vote right there. And tell us why you voted the way you did. Let's see here. I have Dirk. He said, I selected D. It was just a bad look for us last week.
We do. You know, CBS News YouGov conducted some polling post-debate. We can compare it to the pre-debate numbers. And the bottom line, Alice, it's not any good. It's not any good. Look at this. Voters who say that Biden has the mental health to be president. It was just 35% pre-debate. Look where it's dropped to now post-debate, 27%. How about that he should be running for president? It was 37% pre-debate. It's now 28%. I have never seen numbers this bad for an incumbent president during my lifetime. I mean, that mental health to be president, just 27%. You might say, okay, you know, that's low, but a lot of people thought Biden was too old back in 2020. These numbers look nothing like this back in 2020. These numbers were bad already. And the truth is, Allison, they have gotten just considerably worse, even in just a few days after that first presidential debate.
CNN's not okay. If I hear another one of these panels talk about bedwetting,
okay.
Have you heard it?
Yeah.
That's all they say.
Yeah. They're like, listen, Democrats, we've always been bedwetters and whiners. And I'm like,
what does that mean?
No.
Just utter panic.
Yeah. Okay. They're kind of like that little dog that sits in the corner and shakes.
Maybe it's literal.
We've
I haven't considered it.
A possibility. Yeah.
It depends. Always a good depends joke.
Yeah. Great job.
About your bedwetting, how's it going?
Not to beat a dead horse here, but it depends.
How about today?
Last night was rough. I need to really get rid of the waterbed. I've had that since in the 80s, and man, like when you roll, it sloshes, and so in the back of your head, you're like, oh, I gotta pee.
You ever have those dreams? You ever have those dreams where you're just going from one place to the next, trying to find a bathroom to use?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
I just had one of those dreams. I don't know. It's like late last week. And it was so stressful.
Mm-hmm.
And then you wake up like, and you're, gosh, that was stressful. You're like, oh, my gosh, I got to pee. And then it takes me like halfway to the bathroom and be like, oh.
Yeah.
My body was like,
that's what that was.
Putting up all of its defenses. And you're just like in your dream, just trying to look for anywhere to pee. I guess those dreams might seem a little different for dudes than they do for girls, but
nah, no.
You do pee sitting down, so.
Well, no, Brad, it's okay.
No, you just
that
take it,
that was the implication of what I was saying.
Uh-huh.
For a guy to go find a place to urinate is a little bit simpler than for a woman to do it.
No, not in my case. Because like you said,
there you go.
I pee sitting down. The problem is that there's only so many stalls in a men's room. And so to pee sitting down, which is my preference, you have to sit in the urinal. You took it there.
I don't know how these things work. So I'm just assuming you're telling the God's honest truth.
There's a whole set of rules about urinal usage in the men's room.
You don't face outward. That's one.
You don't sit in it. That should be one.
You don't sit in it. That's one.
I'd rather you pee on the floor elsewhere than sitting in the urinal. Ugh.
We got wipes and stuff.
Is it a dream of a dude to have a urinal in your house?
No.
Oh, no. Man, I've heard that from
I feel like if I wanted one, I would just put one in.
Yeah, and if you did, wouldn't you just do like one of those old-fashioned bush troughs or something?
Stainless steel.
Man, one of those old things.
Throw a bucket of ice in there and that's
I think it goes back to childhood. I'm talking directly to Brad here. I'm just sort of keeping Annie out of my periphery.
Yeah, I'm not even here.
Yeah, going back to childhood, when you got to pee in the big kid thing. When you could reach it, you knew you had accomplished.
Yeah,
it was like a rite of passage.
I'm a big boy.
Yeah, and that's what they were in the 80s, so that's pretty much why I'm still there. Annie?
Yeah.
Back to you.
Steve Moore looks real worked up over your shoulder on Fox right now.
Steve Moore is on Fox right now.
It's a big deal to pee outside. Dudes love to pee outside.
You got to be careful as an adult, I'll say that. As a kid, you can kind of get away with it. As a grown man, peeing outside, unless you're in downtown St. Louis,
Ryan, it's looked upon poorly. Ryan, isn't it implied that the urination is taking place in God's country and not like on 159
yeah, by the stoplight.
By Sonic.
Yeah, and usually it's on a golf course. When you do it, you do feel like,
you know what,
this is natural.
Didn't you pee on the golf course one time when we were golfing together? I won't say which one. I think you did.
Did I? I don't remember. Oh.
Oh, don't say where.
No, I don't think I did. Well.
You did.
Maybe I did because I remember looking and saying, oh, their bathrooms are right there, but the woods are right there. Like, they were closer. I don't remember
thus,
I said that, though.
My point, men consider it a flex to urinate outdoors.
We do, but I am different because I still sit.
What a visual. Not only does he sit, it's on the green.
Outside.
What's that hole there
for?
Oh,
there's a hole.
I can hit that. Not with the golf ball.
It said ball washer.
You're going to get in trouble.
No.
This was supposed to be about grading last week in news.
Is that what we were doing?
It's not what we were doing.
Brad, did you play golf when you were like a teenager or younger?
No.
No, he played golf as of like last year.
Oh, I didn't know that was that recent.
A lot. Yeah, I played golf. I mean, I'd gone out and golfed a couple times before that, but really started golfing.
See, I worked at golf courses too, so many of my memories from teenage through college are from golf courses and playing them, being at them. There's so many guy things that happen at golf courses and so many jokes.
I'm learning so many new things about like what the point of golf is. And like one of the first things that I learned about it was the point of golf is for men to get together to drink and smoke cigars.
That's sexist. Go on.
That seems like what they do.
Have you ever golfed with women?
No.
You've never golfed with your wife?
Well, my wife, but we don't drink or smoke cigars, so.
I've golfed with you.
I always just set us aside as an anomaly.
We've never golfed 18 holes.
No. We've played a few, though.
Hmm.
So, Texas rules, though. See, it's stuff like that. That if you don't play, you're like, what the heck is going on?
Yeah, I don't know what Texas rules
you
are.
You don't? No. Oh, really? You either?
I have a feeling that what you're referring to as Texas rules might be called other things by other people, but go on.
If you know what Texas rules are, log on to the Annie Fry YouTube page and give your definition. Because I don't want to say, because maybe other people have other definitions, but I'm pretty sure there's a common one. Let me know. Anyway.
You're afraid you're wrong?
Well, I think that I do know, but I just want to make sure.
This sounds like someone took you on a snipe hunt.
Yeah. It's like a ninth green at nine kind of thing.
See, there are a lot of those things. Golf, man, there were jokes that so I used to be a cart boy at a lot of different golf courses. I think I worked at four different ones in my lifetime. And it was like the same couple jokes were the same ones that every golfer made when they came off. And the main one was, man, you guys, can you turn the heat down? That was, it was like standard. And there are a couple other ones that I'd have to really think about. But everybody wanted to talk about how they played and you just wiped their clubs off. And man, if you got a $5 bill back then, that was big. Now $5 is probably the norm, I would say.
So you're calling Texas rules the same thing as what a man's supposed to do if he doesn't hit past the red tees?
Yes.
See, that's an obvious thing, but I've never heard it referred to as Texas rules.
Really?
I thought those were just the rules.
Those are not just the rules.
So there's no
before
name
for it? Before
you
get put in jail for indecency.
But you didn't have a name for it.
I didn't know it to be Texas rules. So, I've heard of, good grief. Like when we would play euchre in Hamel, if somebody didn't do something we liked, they'd be like, that's Warden Pinochle or Warden Euchre or something. And Hamel and Warden are having a big day because we're talking about him here. What do you got against Texas?
Nothing. I think Texas loves being called Texas rules. I think every man in Texas probably thinks that's the greatest thing. That they've called it Texas rules. And I really am asking that question. Like, if you've ever heard that, please let me know.
I know the rule is very obvious one, especially I could see why it would be more dominantly conversed about with just men.
Yes.
Especially as a female who could probably outdrive men from the red tees.
Yes. Although I think because of that, we did bring it up with you.
Well, are you saying that it's not about outdriving the woman.
No.
It's about hitting the ball past the red tees.
Yes. If you don't hit the ball past the red tees, if you're playing from the men's tees, you have to play the rest of the hole.
With your pants down.
With your pants down.
Again, I think you were taken on a snipe hunt.
I do too.
Have you ever done that?
For the record, I have never seen anybody follow through with those rules.
And if you do, it's a first-time golfer.
And last-time golfer. They're never playing again.
No kidding. Texas rules, huh?
Yeah. Texas rules.
Why
please.
Why do you stick your tongue in your cheek while you say yeah?
I don't know. It feels manly. It's like, yeah, I'm a Texas rule, you know? Like,
why not Vermont rules?
We just spent an entire, because it's Vermont, we just spent an entire segment talking about how I squat to pee, no matter where I am. And so I feel like I got to get a little redemption out of this segment and be like, yeah, Texas rules, you know? Like, something. You say something with a gruff voice.
You said you sit down to pee when you're on the golf course.
I did. I embraced the joke, took it all the way.
Yeah, you did. Well, I'm glad we answered that question.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Which I can't remember what the question, in fact, actually was.
I don't either.
So you want to talk about the poll when we come back?
I really do.
Grade the last week in politics, not including this last segment.
My people are very much Biden, Kamala Harris, and this is an opportunity for Joe Biden to go out there and show he has the stamina and the rest. And by the way, while the press, and for some reason they don't, there are healthcare professionals who think that Trump has dementia, that his connection, his thoughts do not go together.
Man, that's not who I'm thinking about having dementia right now.
That's incredible. She's projecting so much that she might just say, you know who's president right now? Donald Trump. Because she just says the exact opposite of whatever is actually happening.
I've seen that video multiple times. I know what she's going to say in it. Just listening to it, I have no idea what she's talking about.
No.
She's all over the place. Nancy Pelosi, every once in a while. Yeah, I know it's radio, but still sometimes I talk with my hands. It's for Brad and Ryan. Yeah. So they can feel like I really mean it. But every once in a while, I'll do hand gestures and I will be like in the bottom of the fifth inning of trying to make my point, and the hand gesture comes out and it looks from my viewpoint exactly like Nancy Pelosi, and I just want to quit everything.
Could we just start believing everything she says and just seeing what our lives would be like? Because she lives in some sort of other reality that I would like to just sort of participate in for a little while and see what it's like.
Her conclusion here is, you know, there are people who say Donald Trump has dementia.
While the press, and for some reason they don't, there are healthcare professionals who think that Trump has dementia.
Yeah, it's probably Dr. Fauci and Dr. Jill Biden.
They are doctors.
So is Pepper. Dr. Pepper.
Cheers.
Yeah, cheers with my water. I can't handle the gaslighting on this. She comes up and she just looks so nutty. And then she says nutty things, and then she accuses, like, the only coherent person who's running for office right now in Washington, D.C., of having the problems that they seem to be having themselves. I can't. She's crazy.
I don't know what to do with that. I would really like to know, like have one of those CNN panels that gets together after the debate and they discuss it. Get one of those together and just play that 10 seconds from Nancy Pelosi.
They would just go with it. They would just pick up where she leaves off. That's what they do.
No, not the professional panels. The, like, random voter from Ohio.
Like a focus group.
Yeah, one of those things.
So not a, okay.
With the little lines that go as she's talking.
Yeah, like, do they believe it? Are they Republican, Democrat?
They go up real high on the forehead and then they come down.
Yeah, right
they
in the middle.
Up, and then they come down. Grade the last week in politics, Ryan.
Man, as much as I want to be like, well, there's this and that, it's an A. It is for sure an A. I can't find anything that could have gone much better in the last week. It was great. If I find myself over the weekend, because we're steeped in news all the time, and it's not as if I disconnected over the weekend, but if I find myself waking up in the morning and being like, oh, I want to read more news stories, then I know it's been a pretty good week in politics, and I was doing that all weekend.
I give it an A as well, and this is a true story. I came in to work on Friday morning, and I saw Mark Cox in the office out there, and I was like, Mark, is this what it felt like in 2016, the day after? And he's like, yeah, kind of. Like, this is the first time since I've been working in radio that something has happened. We've had a big week, and it's just been really Good news.
This is the first time he's worked with us and felt good.
Mm-hmm. Good news. Good news.
Good news.
You know, we're usually covering like, oh, but now Donald Trump's being prosecuted.
Consecutive good news.
Yes, and it didn't stop. It started with Bowman losing a seat, and this isn't Schadenfreude or anything like that. I'm not happy that he lost a seat because I wanted him to lose a seat.
He's pretty happy.
I'm happy that he lost a seat because it's good for the country. The guy that's replacing him, because that guy's going to win. It's not going to be a Republican who's going to win. The guy that's replacing him is going to be better for the country. I'm looking at St. Louis's race, and I think as much as I disagree with Wesley Bell on almost everything, I still think he would be better for St. Louis than Cori Bush is. I look at him and I'm like, okay, well, that would be good. So what I'm seeing is some sort of sanity returning to the people of the United States. We're kind of getting back to like doing things. And then Joe Biden gets up there and does whatever the heck that was. And then people are like, this is what they've been hiding from us. You know, we've heard people talking about it, but this is what they've been hiding from us.
The DMFI PAC released findings of a comprehensive new poll showing that St. Louis County prosecuting attorney Wesley Bell surging to a 1-point advantage, 43% over 42%, in his bid to defeat incumbent Cori Bush in this August primary. Prior to the surge, he had previously had a double-digit deficit in January. So trends suggest... This is an A.
Yeah.
How is the week anything? I mean, there's a part of me, would it be nice if the Supreme Court justice ruling was 9-0? Listen, these liberal justices are super liberal. They are the activists on the court. They are the ones who, if Hillary Clinton had been in charge of appointing those three Supreme Court justices, the detriment to our country that we'd be facing right now would be, I mean, you can't get it back. And the legacy of Donald Trump exists on the Supreme Court because the Supreme Court constantly goes back to the Constitution. And yeah, there are three people on there that are activists in the way that they tend to rule, just putting an immense amount of authority and privilege on government to make decisions. Bureaucrats, that's the Chevron situation, the Chevron ruling, takes ambiguity in regulation and doesn't just give it to unelected bureaucrats to make a decision on. They took it away from them. They said, no, that's not how this works. I'm really, yeah, I want the conservative principle to win out, but that's because if a conservative principle is done conservatively, then it should be rooted entirely in the Constitution. So I'm interested in constitutionalists on the Supreme Court, not conservatives. I don't know how they vote, although I have an idea how most of them would vote. But they continue to say, listen, I know you took this all the way, I know you got this all the way up to the Supreme Court for us to rule on this, but if it doesn't have the full grounds to be heard by the Supreme Court, try again. A Supreme Court that wanted to be a majority activist would be able to do that. In all of these cases, they would be able to do that. And they've said no. And that's what Roe v. Wade is about as well. Roe v. Wade was basically legislation from the bench, and even Ruth Bader Ginsburg had a problem with that. They've said no. You want to make a law? We will check the constitutionality of the law, but that law's got to go through a different branch of government before it comes to us. That's not why we're here. Those individuals are not elected, and they serve forever. They should not be making any kind of laws whatsoever. They should only be completely and totally adherent to the republic and to the Constitution that is the anchor for a republic. You can't deny that a constitutionalist Supreme Court is going to make everybody a little unhappy all the time. And that's the point. That there's no political party that can ever become so powerful that it can overtake a constitution that oversees all people and protects all people from what? The government. Of course, the thing that the Supreme Court wants to say, that people want the Supreme Court to act in an activist fashion. I'm a little worried about all the winning. I feel like I'm getting buttered up to get smacked down.
I would too if there was more Supreme Court coming. But they just went on break. So I'm like, let's just have a nice 4th of July holiday week.
Happy Independence
Day. And enjoy it.
Ryan's going to be walking you through your morning fireworks. Tell people what they need to do.
Listen Thursday night, from 8 p.m. to 11 p.m. Apparently, I didn't say that in the promo. But I figured when I said music for fireworks that you weren't lighting off firecrackers at 8 a.m.
Fireworks was, I'm sure people will be all day.
I feel free.
But
no key, music for you.
The key here is the p.m. nighttime fireworks.
Yes. Starting at 8 p.m. when it's starting to get dark, we start our music for fireworks. And the fun thing is, we do this every year, so I switch it up a little bit every year. Of course, we're going to have some of the same songs. But
got a great new national anthem this year.
Yeah, really patriotic stuff. And I'm looking more this year for like moments in great American speeches that are like under a minute that you can just kind of splice in there, because I think those really hit really well. So
you're really
enjoy.
Putting a lot of work into this.
Oh, I love it every year. It's one of my favorite things I get to do here.
8 to 11.
8 to 11 p.m. Music for your evening fireworks. For your morning fireworks, you're on your own.
One of those other stations is doing morning fireworks. You'll be here for your nighttime fireworks.
Right.
Oh, great. The last week in the news and the politics, A, B, / C, D, or F on the Annie Fry YouTube channel. Come say hi. We'd love to talk to you. Let's take a quick break. More Annie Fry Show right after this.
Tariffs. And this is an opportunity for Joe Biden to go out there and show he has the stamina and the rest. And by the way, while the press, and for some reason they don't, there are healthcare professionals who think that Trump has dementia, that his connection, his thoughts do not go together.
Man, that's not who I'm thinking about having dementia right now.
That's incredible. She's projecting so much that she might just say, you know who's president right now? Donald Trump. Because she just says the exact opposite of whatever is actually happening.
I've seen that video multiple times. I know what she's going to say in it. Just listening to it, I have no idea what she's talking about.
No.
She's all over the place. Nancy Pelosi, every once in a while. I know it's radio, but still sometimes I talk with my hands. It's for Brad and Ryan. Yeah. So they can feel like I really mean it. But every once in a while, I'll do hand gestures and I will be like in the bottom of the fifth inning of trying to make my point, and the hand gesture comes out and it looks from my viewpoint exactly like Nancy Pelosi, and I just want to quit everything.
Could we just start believing everything she says and just seeing what our lives would be like? Because she lives in some sort of other reality that I would like to just sort of participate in for a little while and see what it's like.
Her conclusion here is, you know, there are people who say Donald Trump has dementia.
While the press, and for some reason they don't, there are healthcare professionals who think that Trump has dementia.
Yeah, it's probably Dr. Fauci and Dr. Jill Biden.
They are doctors.
So is Pepper. Dr. Pepper.
Cheers.
Yeah, cheers with my water. I can't handle the gaslighting on this. She comes up and she just looks so nutty. And then she says nutty things. And then she accuses, like, the only coherent person who's running for office right now in Washington, D.C. of having the problems that they seem to be having themselves. I can't. She's crazy.
I don't know what to do with that. I would really like to know, like have one of those CNN panels that gets together after the debate and they discuss it. Get one of those together and just play that 10 seconds from Nancy Pelosi.
They would just go with it. Mm-hmm. They would just pick up where she leaves off. That's what they do.
No, not the professional panels. The like random voter from Ohio.
Like a focus group.
Yeah, one of those things.
So not a, okay.
With the little lines that go as she's talking.
Yeah, like do they believe it? Are they Republican, Democrat?
They go up real high on the forehead and then they come down.
Yeah, right
they
in the middle.
Up, and then they come down. Great the last week in politics, Ryan.
Man, as much as I want to be like, well, there's this and that, it's an A. It is for sure an A. I can't find anything that could have gone much better in the last week. It was great. If I find myself over the weekend, because we're steeped in news all the time, and it's not as if I disconnected over the weekend, but if I find myself waking up in the morning and being like, oh, I want to read more news stories, then I know it's been a pretty good week in politics, and I was doing that all weekend.
I give it an A as well, and this is a true story. I came in to work on Friday morning, and I saw Mark Cox in the office out there, and I was like, Mark, is this what it felt like in 2016, the day after? And he's like, yeah, kind of. Like, this is the first time in since I've been working in radio that something has happened. We've had a big week, and it's just been really good news.
This is the first time he's worked with us and felt good.
Mm-hmm. Good news. Good news.
Good news.
You know, we're usually covering like, oh, but now Donald Trump's being prosecuted.
Consecutive good news.
Yes, and it didn't stop. It started with Bowman losing a seat, and this isn't Schadenfreude or anything like that. I'm not happy that he lost a seat because I wanted him to lose a seat.
He's pretty happy.
I'm happy that he lost a seat because it's good for the country. The guy that's replacing him, because that guy's going to win. It's not going to be a Republican who's going to win. The guy that's replacing him is going to be better for the country. I'm looking at St. Louis's race, and I think as much as I disagree with Wesley Bell on almost everything, I still think he would be better for St. Louis than Cori Bush is. I look at him and I'm like, okay, well, that would be good. So what I'm seeing is some sort of sanity returning to the people of the United States. We're kind of getting back to like doing things. And then Joe Biden gets up there and does whatever the heck that was. And then people are like, this is what they've been hiding from us. You know, we've heard people talking about it, but this is what they've been hiding from us.
The DMFI PAC released findings of a comprehensive new poll showing that St. Louis County prosecuting attorney Wesley Bell surging to a 1-point advantage, 43% over 42%, in his bid to defeat incumbent Cori Bush in this August primary. Prior to the surge, he had previously had a double-digit deficit in January. So trends suggest... This is an A.
Yeah.
How is the week anything? I mean, there's a part of me, would it be nice if the Supreme Court justice ruling was 9-0? Listen, these liberal justices are super liberal. They are the activists on the court. They are the ones who, if Hillary Clinton had been in charge of appointing those three Supreme Court justices, the detriment to our country that we'd be facing right now would be, I mean, you can't get it back. And the legacy of Donald Trump exists on the Supreme Court because the Supreme Court constantly goes back to the Constitution. And yeah, there are three people on there that are activists in the way that they tend to rule, just putting an immense amount of authority and privilege on government to make decisions. Bureaucrats, that's the Chevron situation, the Chevron ruling, takes ambiguity in regulation and doesn't just give it to unelected bureaucrats to make a decision on. They took it away from them. They said, no, that's not how this works. I want the conservative principle to win out, but that's because if a conservative principle is done conservatively, then it should be rooted entirely in the Constitution. So I'm interested in constitutionalists on the Supreme Court, not conservatives. I don't know how they vote, although I have an idea how most of them would vote. But they continue to say, listen, I know you took this all the way, I know you got this all the way up to the Supreme Court for us to rule on this, but if it doesn't have the full grounds to be heard by the Supreme Court, try again. A Supreme Court that wanted to be a majority activist would be able to do that. In all of these cases, they would be able to do that. And they've said no. And that's what Roe v. Wade is about as well. Roe v. Wade was basically legislation from the bench. And even Ruth Bader Ginsburg had a problem with that. They've said no. You want to make a law? We will check the constitutionality of the law. But that law's got to go through a different branch of government before it comes to us. That's not why we're here. Those individuals are not elected and they serve forever. They should not be making any kind of laws whatsoever. They should only be completely and totally adherent to the republic and to the Constitution that is the anchor for a republic. You can't deny that a constitutionalist Supreme Court is going to make everybody a little unhappy all the time. And that's the point. That there's no political party that can ever become so powerful that it can overtake a constitution that oversees all people and protects all people from what? The government. Of course, the thing that the Supreme Court wants to say, that people want the Supreme Court to act in an activist fashion. I'm a little worried about all the winning. I feel like I'm getting buttered up. to get smacked down.
I would too if there was more Supreme Court coming, but they just went on break. So I'm like, let's just have a nice 4th of July holiday week.
Happy Independence Day.
And enjoy it.
Ryan's going to be walking you through your morning fireworks. Tell people what they need to do.
Listen, Thursday night from 8 p.m. to 11 p.m. Apparently, I didn't say that in the promo. But I figured when I said music for fireworks that you weren't lighting off firecrackers at 8 a.m.
Fireworks was, I'm sure people will be all day.
I feel free.
But
no key, music for you.
The key here is the p.m. nighttime fireworks.
Yes. Starting at 8 p.m. when it's starting to get dark, we start our music for fireworks. And the fun thing is, we do this every year, so I switch it up a little bit every year. Of course, we're going to have some of the same songs. But
great new national anthem this year.
Yeah, really patriotic stuff. And I'm looking more this year for like moments in great American speeches that are like under a minute that you can just kind of splice in there, because I think those really hit really well. So
you're really
enjoy.
Putting a lot of work into this.
Oh, I love it every year. It's one of my favorite things I get to do here.
8 to 11.
8 to 11 p.m. Music for your evening fireworks. For your morning fireworks, you're on your own.
One of those other stations is doing morning fireworks. You'll be here for your nighttime fireworks.
Right.
Oh, great. The last week in the news and the politics, A, B, / C, D, or F on the Annie Fry YouTube channel. Come say hi. We'd love to talk to you. Let's take a quick break. More Annie Fry Show right after this.